Welcome back to my wrestling podcast. My name is Jeff Desiato, and I'm ready to recap the last two live shows as well as reviewing the Backlash PLE from Lyon, France. So why don't we dive in? First, I'll do a quick recap of the Go Home SmackDown before we get into Backlash, which will be the primary talking point, as well as a lead up to King of the Ring, King and Queen of the Ring, my apologies, which is coming up in just a few short weeks. So let's recap SmackDown. We had an opening match with Bayley Belair, Cargill and Naomi versus Damage Control and Tiffany Stratton. The good guys won. Not much to go home with here. This is kind of formulaic WWE booking where you have a bunch of people together before a go-home show. The crowd was fantastic, and it only got us a taste of what we would experience with the PLE. But it's, you know, starting off the night with some good guys winning, that's fine. We also had the Authors of Pain versus New Catch Republic, and the Authors of Pain, in my opinion, picked up a much needed win. You need to establish heels. My concern right now with the WWE, which is while I love that they're serving the audience and we have all these great baby faces, some of these heel tag teams and stuff end up just being enhancement talent. I mean, you have Legado del Fantasma losing matches left and right. You have AOP losing matches left and right. I mean, we have A Town Down Under able to win now because they're the champions, but we've just seen this a lot. So it's good for them to get a win. I love New Catch Republic, but we need to establish this final Testament faction because, in my opinion, it's the final chance for Karrion Kross to become something, and he needs to start picking up some wins. Even if it's through cheating and interference, you have to have him seem like a threat, and right now he just doesn't feel like it. So we saw backstage there was a moment with Bobby Lashley and Carmelo Hayes, and they had teased something here. And it would be really interesting to see Carmelo Hayes. See, I thought Carmelo Hayes may be somebody who would go really well in a faction with Bobby Lashley. I know there was rumors months ago about that. But to see them, to see Melo as the young upstart disrespecting Bobby Lashley, that could be an interesting little feud as we build up. And it would add a lot of credibility to Carmelo Hayes. Bobby Lashley, I mean, he's perpetually over with the fans at this point. The fact that they tried to make the Pride a heel faction at first was just stupid. And because people love the Street Profits as well. And Montez Ford was doing this like over the top, silly heel, like I'm a tough guy thing that just doesn't work. So they eventually kept them babyface. So it'll be interesting to see is Carmelo Hayes a heel here? But what we need to see more of is these factions and their dynamic. They spend, hours upon hours in weekly programming on the Bloodline, on the Judgment Day. But you have to kind of share the wealth a little bit if you want these factions to really establish themselves in the eyes of the audience. Next up, you have LA Knight versus Angel. Here's an example. You know, these guys are basically, we're supposed to take Legado del Fantasma seriously. And LA Knight basically squashes him, which is fine. I don't know what they're doing with LA Knight, man. It just feels like they're just, it's almost like they resent the fact that he got so over on his own that they're like just keeping, they gave him the match against Roman Reigns, which some could argue was rushed because he was, but he was so hot. It was a great feud. I would have loved to have seen more for it. I think it could have been a real good long-term feud. But now he's just kind of spinning his wheels. He's 50-50 with AJ Styles now. Are we going to get a third match, a rubber match where LA Knight goes over to establish him? Because the fact that he lost the number one contenders match to AJ Styles kind of diminishes his WrestleMania victory. Are we going to have him feud with Santos Escobar, which, you know, Santos has kind of cooled off as well. I felt like he was hot and ready to go with the whole LWO thing. And then the way they booked that, and then they didn't really have a payoff with Rey and Santos and stuff. It just, this is one area where I guess like my more critical faculties are starting to tune in. You know, I'm very easy to please. I usually put things over. I'm a pretty positive guy. If I want to be entertained, I will look to be entertained. I don't come at this with like a critical eye as many other wrestling podcasters do. But this is one thing where I'm like, you got to give me a little more. Give me something. Let Legado del Fantasma. I think he's got charisma out the wazoo, Santos. I love him as a heel, and I would love to see him be established. He's incredibly talented in the ring as well. I'd love to see him get some opportunities here. And while this is kind of one of those things, you know, one of the things that became a crutch, I guess, to Vince McMahon's booking was, you know, let's just keep the hot potato title, you know? And that's why you have these guys who, I mean, no offense, but you have like Edge with 11 world title reigns. Like that's excessive in my opinion. John Cena 16, Randy Orton 14 or 15, whatever it is. Like everyone just keeps winning the title back from everybody. Like that's frustrating when you look at it, because no one's really going to get there again as long as Triple H is booking. But at the same time, you have all these guys who deserve to be fighting for something. And I feel like they are missing out. I mean, you got Logan Paul's had the title for what? Almost 8 months now? 9 months? And if he might have a year-long U.S. title reign, if we're going to SummerSlam with him in his hometown. But like, there's all these guys that have been kind of stuck on the back burner. That's one of the reasons why I was frustrated with the Sami Zayn win, was he didn't need that title as much as a Chad Gable or somebody else could have benefited from that title. But anyway, I digress. KO was there, speaking French to the crowd, which is always nice. I actually watched, it was really cool. I watched something that WWE put out where Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens watched back their WrestleMania 39 main event match against the Usos, but they did it in French and they put it out right before Backlash, which I thought was cool. So you had the Street Profits versus A-Town Down Under. Of course, the bad guys retained because they had to. And the tag match or tag division is strong right now, and I think that that's important to highlight. But with that, you have to be careful who you set up. And I'll talk a little bit about this when we get into the King of the Ring tournament. You have to be careful who you're feeding to whom, because it can get messy sometimes. All right. So anyway, I have to talk about Backlash. I can't do the Raw after Backlash without talking about Backlash. So Backlash was, in my opinion, a very strong B pay-per-view, as they are referred to. Light on the wrestling in the sense that there was only 5 matches, but those matches delivered, in my opinion. I think you had furthering of story, which is really important. I think when you're not going to have a lot of wrestling matches, you have to further story. We had story developments with the Judgment Day. You had story developments with Randy Orton, Kevin Owens, and the Bloodline, the Rogue Bloodline. And then the match with Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles was a banger. To borrow Sheamus's term, it was fantastic. And everybody who was doubting AJ Styles and saying he was in the twilight of his career, he brought it. Maybe it was the energy of the crowd, which was just ridiculous. I mean, everyone's talking about how great it was. There were moments, I will just admit, that it was kind of like, are you guys even enjoying the wrestling? Because it just felt like the crowd was hijacking a little bit. And I might be in the minority with that opinion. I felt like there were times where I was like, you're more excited to chant things than you are to cheer for what's happening in the ring. Which I get it. It's each his own. Might be a cultural thing. I don't know. So anyway, let's go through these matches. The street fight was a great touch, I think, because it allowed them to have interference and to introduce Tangaloa to the Bloodline. A lot of rumors were that Jacob Fatu was going to be introduced, but this was a pretty standard tag team street fight. But it was interesting. It felt a little bit like a Monday Night Raw because SmackDown, because Nick Aldis comes out and is like, hey, I'm changing this to a street fight. So that part kind of felt a little bit just like a SmackDown, because that's something they would do. But it was really interesting to see it as the opening of a PLE. And in my opinion, the right decision was made to have the Bloodline go over, and the introduction of Tangaloa and the, you know, unofficial, what do you call it, reuniting of the Gorillas of Destiny from New Japan. But what I actually am going to I'm really loving this KO Randy Orton tag team, and I think they should let it run for a while. RKO obviously seems redundant, but whatever they were doing with Riddle and Randy, I know Riddle's not in the company anymore. That was the people want to cheer Randy Orton, right? They want that. And Kevin Owens, as like the comedic meta wrestler that he's always been, calling out the, you know, the things that are supposedly breaking the fourth wall about the wrestling business. It's a fun dynamic, and I think it would be interesting to see these guys tag for a while and then maybe have Kevin Owens turn heel on Randy Orton. Because I don't know. I mean, Randy Orton, he's entering that Bobby Lashley status in that, like, yes, he is a great heel, and yeah, it would be fun to have him turn heel, but I just think he's gotten past that point where even if he goes heel, he will be a babyface, if that makes sense. Even if he does heelish things, people just love Randy Orton. We love that we're getting this encore, essentially, because there was a period where you felt that you might not get Randy Orton again. His career may be over. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with that. I'm just skimming through here to see if I missed anything. So we'll move on. Bailey, triple threat with Naomi and Tiffany Stratton. Naomi taking the pin. An interesting choice. I know that you're trying to keep Tiffany Stratton hot, because she's been booked really strong. Sorry, I'm just trying to adjust my microphone here. It's not a high-dollar operation, as you can imagine. But it was nice to see that they're keeping Naomi babyface after the match. Tiffany Stratton continues to impress, and she's obviously going to have – she's obviously got a rocket on her back. It feels like – I feel like Money in the Bank is a possibility for her. Her work – a lot of people are saying, you know – her winning Money in the Bank and having a pink briefcase and just, you know, the Tiffy time being synonymous with the cash in would be really interesting. Like, everybody's going to be like, is it Tiffy time yet? You know, is this when she's going to cash in? I think that would be a smart move on WWE's part. And that may already be in the works. I don't know. But one of the things about the current regime is that they seem to sense what the audience wants and they give it to them. Even though that sometimes makes the outcome predictable, like Bailey winning the Rumble, for instance, that also means that you're telling clear stories and the audience can see where we're going ahead and they can get on board. This is kind of one of the things I notice as I listen to podcasts and I hear people who are more invested and more involved in the wrestling environment is that they come up with ideas and I'm like, ooh, that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought about that, but now that I've heard that, that's what I want to happen. And I feel like there's a lot of that going on now where we're, you know, they're seeding the narrative in a way, the wrestling community. And it's really fascinating. I feel like it's pretty incredible that I got in when I did. I came in at the tail end of the worst era in terms of like my, I said a little bit at the introduction of this podcast, there was, I think it was in 2019 when I kind of started to peripherally check back in with what was going on in wrestling. I didn't watch anything, but I would watch, I would read articles about it and things like that. And then in 2020 with the pandemic, I started to watch old stuff again. And then I would start, and then I'd start watching the This Week in WWE on Peacock, which would just kind of recap the week and the big events so I could stay up to date with what was happening. And then occasionally tune into a PLE on Peacock. And then I don't know exactly when. I would say it was probably end of 2021, maybe beginning of 2022, when I started watching every week. Probably 2022. It was right around the time that Sami Zayn joined the Bloodline, which, I mean, talk about kismet. It was just fantastic. I picked the best time to get back into watching as a regular wrestling fan, and the payoff of WrestleMania 40 after that. I mean, I feel for all you fans that have been with the company, with the product through the doldrums. But man, is this a fun time to watch? Bailey picks up the win. Sorry, I'm really kind of digressing a lot and going off on tangents. But as I get more comfortable, I start to share more backstory and things like that. And I'm still trying to figure out what this podcast is going to be. I don't know if it'll necessarily be just a review of past episodes and stuff. Maybe it'll just be my thoughts based on what has happened, instead of recapping match by match. So we'll see how that goes as I get more comfortable with it. Damian Priest versus Jey Uso. Damian Priest retained. It was a great match. Probably the best singles match I can remember watching with Jey Uso. And it showed that he actually has more moves than just super kick, which is kind of after WrestleMania 40, that's what people were concerned about, was that is this guy just super kick and that's it? That's all he can do. But we had Judgment Day interference, which was then shut down by Damian Priest, which was really interesting. Or he didn't want it originally. He's like, what are you doing here? And then they end up helping him by getting his foot on the rope. So that adds a layer of complexity. And then post-match, you have them beating down Jey Uso and Damian Priest actually getting physical with Finn Balor and JD McDonagh, which they're trying to turn in babyface. I don't know a single person who is clamoring for Damian Priest to be a babyface. This is kind of my, I don't know what to say. Like, there's one thing when someone's such a hot heel and so liked that they have to turn them, like with LA Knight, like people just loved him as a heel. And then you have Roman. Now everybody's chanting, we want Roman. So he'll be a babyface when he comes back. But Damian, I don't know anybody who is clamoring for Damian Priest to be a babyface. I don't understand this. I don't know how you would turn him babyface while he's the champion, because then you would have two babyface world title champions. And I don't know if there's enough credible heels. So I just don't really understand it. I would like to see, rather than him turning babyface, him turning into an egomaniac because he's now the title and he's the leader of the Judgment Day, and have them kick him out and maybe have him fall from grace, and then you slowly build him as a babyface. I just don't see him having like a babyface turn and that how it serves anybody, in my opinion. That's just my two cents. Some people might think I have a problem with Damian Priest. I don't. I just don't know that I see what everyone else in the company claims to see. Okay, so probably one of the more – every match was predictable in terms of outcome. That's the problem with these post-WrestleMania PLEs. The only time there's a chance of anything significant happening is if someone surprisingly retains at WrestleMania and then you turn – I think that's what they did. Is that what they did with Bianca Belair last year when Asuka won at Backlash? I think something to that effect. But Bianca Belair, Jade Cargill, I don't know how there is a tag team on the roster that could ever dethrone these two because they're so powerful and so impressive. But they won. People were talking about how the match seemed sloppy and a botch fest and all that kind of stuff with the wrong people taking pins and the legal man, you know, the referee having to do that. But, you know, that stuff comes. And part of it for me, while I might notice it, what it feels like is that it feels real to me. It feels like these people are in the heat of battle, and they don't keep track of who the legal man is. The referee steps in and says, "You're the legal man. You can't do that." That just feels like what a referee would do in a match. You know, it didn't feel like it was like off script or whatever. I a lot of people were like, "Oh, that was a mistake" or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. I just felt like it was a hot match, and you know, in the chaos, you had all these like people breaking up pins and stuff. You lose track of that kind of stuff, so that didn't bother me as much. But Bianca and Jade, they have to hold these titles for a long time because the women's tag team titles are, I mean, just no offense to them, but the fact that just a few months ago, these titles were held by Kayden Carter and Katana Chance, and they weren't established on the roster at all, and they have no discernible purpose, and we haven't really seen them since they lost the titles. That says all you need to know about what the women's tag team titles are right now. So Jade and Bianca are probably the best people to hold these titles, especially if the end game is a match between the two of them. You could have a lot of storytelling going on with these titles. And then finally, at the main event, Cody Rhodes and AJ Styles. What a great match. Obviously, Cody Rhodes wasn't losing, but they made, as I had said in the last podcast, they made the match about these two legends, these two trailblazers who kind of have redefined the wrestling industry, just taking their best shot at each other, and the fans were on board from the get-go, and AJ Styles turned back the clock. Cody Rhodes had showed that he is fantastic in the ring. There isn't really a weakness to Cody Rhodes' game. Everybody's like, oh, he cries all the time, or like people just love to hate, but Cody Rhodes can handle the media no matter what, whether it's a small podcast or Today Show or Good Morning America or what have you. He obviously looks like a Ken doll. He's great with the kids and the Make-A-Wish. He's great in the ring. He's great on the mic. Like, he's a five-tool player. And let him have his run. Stop looking for, like, okay, now what? You know, nobody was saying now what when Roman was the champion. And Roman was the guy that was forced down our throats. And now it's ironic that people are like, we want Roman back. This guy's being forced down our throats. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, have a little perspective, you know? But anyway, that was Backlash. A great PLE. You know, almost like a palate cleanser after that whole build up to WrestleMania and the 2 years of the finish the story. It was a nice kind of start to the new wrestling season, as it were, if you look at WrestleMania being like the closing of a chapter. I'm excited for King and Queen of the Ring, and we'll talk about that because we had going into Monday at Raw, we had the highlights. I'm sorry, not the highlights, the qualifiers. I thought this was a great Monday Night Raw, honestly. Like, everyone, I think, was concerned that we were having a lull with the draft and everything, but the fact that they put the emphasis on wrestling, and these were great matches. And one thing I will say about this King and Queen of the Ring tournament, which I was actually surprised by, and now some of the previously announced matches are being changed and stuff like that, and I get it. Like, if the, you know, you don't want people to take a loss and stuff like that. But what I will say is, about when they initially announced what the head-to-head matchups were going to be, I was like, I honestly can't pick who's going to win these matches because, in my opinion, these people, like, I don't know who can afford to lose. And that was daring on their part to have these people be head-to-head and to, you know, especially because you had originally it was supposed to be Drew McIntyre versus Jey Uso. And you're like, okay, well who's going to win this match? Announced in advance of the show, we had Sheamus versus Gunther, Ricochet versus Ilya Dragunov, Jey Uso versus Finn Balor, Lyra Valkyria versus Asuka, Natalya versus Io Sky, Ivy Nile versus Zoe Stark. Now, right out of the get-go, I can't talk. Originally, it was supposed to be Drew McIntyre versus Jey Uso. Originally, it was supposed to be Finn Balor versus Drew McIntyre. And you would say, oh, well, Drew McIntyre is going to win. And he ultimately, I think he was supposed to win. Whether his injury is real or it's just storyline in terms of him not being able to compete, I don't know. But Jey Uso going over shows that Finn Balor was supposed to lose regardless. However, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, Ricochet just won the speed title. Is he going to get fed to Ilya? Probably, I guess. Sheamus and Gunther, you're like, well, Gunther's being set up to be the King of the Ring, one could argue. But can Sheamus afford to lose a third match to Gunther? I know he's in the twilight of his career and he's putting people over and stuff. Ivy Nile versus Zoe Stark, you knew the outcome of that. Natalya versus Io Sky, you kind of knew the, you know. So as I look at it, maybe they weren't as, but there were other matches too where you're like, Kofi Kingston versus Rey Mysterio. Who's going to win that match? I don't know. I don't know who benefits more from winning that match, honestly. Especially because ultimately I don't see either of them as King of the Ring. And then on the SmackDown side, we'll get to that. You know, after in the next episode, we'll see where we go with that. But there were some matches like Bobby Lashley and things like that that were announced in the bracket that I'm like, wow, I don't know who's going to win this match, which is good. That's taking risks because a lot of times with these tournaments, you can see the outcome play out before as soon as they put the bracket out. You're like, well, that person, you know, it's like Drew McIntyre versus Otis. And you're like, oh, okay. You know, like sometimes with those, because they're so concerned, rightfully so, with protecting the talent and protecting the build to different events, that it can kind of feel like these tournaments are pointless in a way because you're like, I already know the outcome. They're doing a better job now of booking these matches in such a way where you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't know who's going to get there. Like, they might be setting me up to think Gunther's going to win the King of the Ring, but what if there's a surprise? What if it's Jey Uso? What if it's LA Knight? You know, like, I think they're doing a good job here. And this was a great Monday Night Raw, in my opinion. You had the Judgment Day kick off Monday Night Raw and address the tension, and they seem to resolve it. This has happened multiple times with the Judgment Day. We were like, oh, they're about to break up, and then they resolve their issues, which is good for storytelling, but you know that there's going to be one of these times is going to be one too many times. And I feel like the way to go, which I had said earlier, I would rather Damian Priest become like a Roman Reigns tribal chief in the sense that he just gets all the power goes to his head. And you have the Judgment Day turn on Damian Priest, but it doesn't necessarily make him a babyface because he's been kind of a you-know-what to them. And the faction kind of dissolves in that way. And then you could spin off and have JD and Finn together, and they could be a tag team or something to that effect. And then Dom could be tied up with the Liv Rhea drama, and then Damian Priest can go off on his own. I think that's the way to do it, rather than like be and maybe have Judgment Day cost Priest the title in Clash of the Castle to Drew McIntyre, and they're like, you know what, we're done with this. You don't deserve you have treated us crap, you know, like crap, and you're done. I feel like that should be the way they go. I don't see them turning on Priest and making Priest a babyface just yet. I think he needs more time to grow to be a babyface, in my opinion. But we had them, Finn Balor was like, oh, I get a bye, yay. But then, because Drew McIntyre isn't able to compete, and then they install Jey Uso into the match. And then Uso beats Finn Balor to advance, and Drew McIntyre shows up in the ring. So that's why I'm like, I don't know if he's actually injured, or they just figured this would help tell the story. But interesting. We got all... Drew McIntyre has beef with so many people. It's really interesting to me. I think they could do a lot of different things. Let's see. Moving on. CM Punk had a promo, which was okay. It wasn't great. But just the entire thing with Drew McIntyre backstage, CM Punk having that long shot entrance, which is always fun. This feud with Drew McIntyre and CM Punk is going to be electric when it finally does happen, and who knows when it will. Natalya versus Io Sky was actually a really good match. A lot of people giving Natalya great props for just bringing it when she can, even though she's basically just an enhancement talent at this point. Io Sky wins. And then, man, what a match. Ricochet versus Ilya Dragunov. Ilya Dragunov is going to be somebody who can really just excite the fan base, I think. He's just very different, aggressive, just really violent. And while it's surprising to see Ricochet take the loss right after winning his speed championship, not surprising that Ilya Dragunov can have a great match with Ricochet. Ivy Nile versus Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark is somebody who has a lot of potential. She needs to get better on the mic. And it's interesting they had this Shayna Baszler or Zoe Stark pairing that never really became anything. I thought for sure they would win the tag titles, but then you have Bianca and Jade, and it's like, okay, I feel like maybe Shayna and Zoe are the only two on the women's roster as a tag team that could threaten Jade and Bianca, just because they're so strong and have that fighting background. We'll see with that. Bronson Reed versus Chad Gable went to a no contest. You had Sami Zayn interfere. So there's a lot going here. Probably a triple threat match coming. But who takes the loss? Does Chad Gable get the pin? Or does Bronson Reed get pinned? Because I think you need Chad Gable to be the one to beat Sami Zayn. And originally, I had said, I thought maybe they were having Sami Zayn win against Gunther because the end game was to get the title on Chad Gable. But they did not see the storyline to get Chad Gable to be the one. Maybe they thought that Gable beating him would hurt Gunther's credibility too much. I don't know. Because Gable had been booked so poorly for years and was always seen as like a comedic act. So maybe they wanted to have Gable turn heel to add that layer, to get him away from the comedy stuff, to give him that layer of credibility and intensity so that he could be a believable champion. Maybe that was it. And now, you know, they saw Sami Zayn as being the guy to dethrone Gunther almost as a transitional champion. I don't know if that's the case, but what I will say is that I want Chad Gable to win a singles title. I think he's earned it. I think he's fantastic in the ring. I think he's entertaining as all get out, and I think he deserves it. Now, wrestling isn't, a participation trophy kind of thing. You don't get rewarded just because, you know, you're a good team player necessarily. You need to be able to get the fans behind you, but I think he proved that he can do that. In the fact that people were initially disappointed that it was Sami Zayn who was going to be the one to fight Gunther at WrestleMania. Now, that moment was fantastic of him ending the reign, but still, I think there's more here, and I would love to see maybe at SummerSlam, Gable beat Sami Zayn for the title and build that faction with the Creed brothers. And I could see Ivy Nile being a good heel, too. She could be that, and it would be really interesting to see what ends up ultimately happening with the Alpha Academy as a result. Becky Lynch's promo was useless, in my opinion. I felt like it was obviously you got to get Liv and all that. But boy, oh boy, like the fact that they cut matches and are putting them on the live events. I think it's the Rey Mysterio match with Kofi and the Zelina Vega Shayna Baszler match, if I'm not mistaken, that they put them on the live events and they're going to recap them. Like, get rid of this promo. This did nothing, in my opinion. I'm not even going to spend a lot of time on it. Lyra Valkyria, Dakota Kai. This was actually a really good match, too. And I was surprised by how into the matches I was. Because I'm definitely more of a story guy when it comes to wrestling. Like, I love the physicality of the matches and stuff like that. But oftentimes, when it's just matches for matches' sake and there's just a bunch of moves happening and there's no storytelling going on, I can get lost. Or you can lose me. Because wrestling ultimately is a storytelling medium. And I think sometimes these athletes forget that. Some of the younger ones, it's the mature ones, the Sheamus and the Gunther match, for instance, that it's like, oh my gosh, this is physical wrestling, but they're telling a story because there's all this history there. Fantastic. Valkyria won, beating Dakota Kai. I would like to see Damage Control really take on that heel faction on Raw and just kind of be in everybody's business. Dakota Kai as a heel is great, I think. She's got a lot of charisma. Sheamus and Gunther, great match. Sheamus eating the pin again. He submitted, which is, you know, they protected him in the sense that they had the knee injury angle so that when he put the pressure on there, he had to tap out. But Gunther, I mean, I'd be surprised at this point. Like, they haven't really established anybody else as a realistic competitor to Gunther winning the King of the Ring, in my opinion. So I'm interested to see the SmackDown side of things to see what happens there. But all in all, I thought this was a great episode of Monday Night Raw. Really excited for the rest of the King and Queen of the Ring matches as we get to the PLE in Saudi Arabia. I have no predictions yet. Maybe as I see the matches start to unfold, I'll be able to give you my predictions of who will be the King and Queen of the Ring. But as of now, it's TBD. We've only had one night of qualifying matches in the tournament. So we need to see what the SmackDown side brings and then where we go from here. So with that, thanks for tuning in. I appreciate your patience as I try to lock into a schedule here. And I would love for you to subscribe if you came across this by accident. Wouldn't it be great for you to be on the ground floor of a brand new wrestling show and say, I was there when he was fumbling and stumbling and bumbling, trying to figure out what to do. I was there from the beginning. I would love to hear from you as well. JeffDesiato@yahoo.com. Love to hear from you. Until next time. Get out there and enjoy the wrestling.